Welcome to this chapter on challenges and risks. So, over the last chapters, we have seen the journey towards vendor assessment, contracting, right? And if you have read through the entire contents, you will see that some concepts or fundamentals revolve around in each of the headings. So, in this chapter, what we will do is we will just touch upon the type of risk. We are also going to look at the challenges faced. And then we'll quickly touch upon risk monitoring, right? So, starting with challenges in outsourcing. Now, for sure, outsourcing is a challenging activity, right? And you will land up with multiple challenges. Again, as I keep on saying, these are guidelines for reference and may not be exhaustive, and there may be a variation or deviation of activities on the field. And these may be subjective to your domain, right? So, let's look at some of the challenges in outsourcing. We start with the first one, which is this, the favorite one, getting the right partner, right? So, this remains the number one challenge in outsourcing, right? Getting the right partner is important, and as you will agree, the vendor engagement is done based on your assessment, right? So, any lacuna in terms of the assessment activity will have an impact on the outcome. What happens is, you are going with a reference, right? You are going with some research reference to arrive at the, I would say, the right service provider or partner to engage with. You don't have a pre-hand experience in terms of a business relationship with that partner, and which is why this comes out as a challenge, because end of the day, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, right? So, if you choose the right partner, you will be able to have a fruitful engagement. Now, what happens under the choice of partner? So, if you look at regular examples, right? What happens, for example, say in interviews, right? You have a small window to assess the candidate, right? You will have certain questions, candidate will have answers, and those will be in light of or subject to what is understood, right? The actual or nitty-gritties or minute details are not covered, right? Even in your regular, I would say, day-to-day life interaction types, right? Simple example, like you meet across somebody, some new acquaintance, discussion, and then you come to food habits, right? You just have a casual question probably. Are you a vegetarian or a non-vegetarian, right? It's at a very high level, and the guy says, yes, I'm a vegetarian, right? So, fine. The discussions don't go beyond that, right? But down the line, probably your assumption and his assumption may vary in terms of, yes, I am a vegetarian, but I do eat cakes. Now, that's something which is a habit which you will come to know probably if you are more into discussions or having food with him. But at a higher level, you would conceptually feel, fine, he's away from eggs and meat, right? So, even in cases of the vendor assessments, it's a dialogue, right? You release a RFP, you ask for a response from the vendor, and you will have certain questions where the vendor will respond, right? Yes, I comply to this, I am able to do this, I can do that, right? And you are assessing based on the positivity of the responses, correct? When you actually do that job, the situation is different on ground, right? It is dependent on the technological setup, it is dependent on how that process is linked to other businesses and how it works through an entire workflow, right? So, which is why the partner concept of getting the right person, I would say the right partner, becomes critical, very, very important. And here, again, I am touching upon this on the same point. You should take a reference from their existing or earlier customers, right? It is important to discuss with the earlier customers, get some feedback in terms of how the actual delivery has been by this vendor, right? Look out for customers who the service provider has served for at least minimum 2 years, right? So it's like at a duration you come to know in terms of how the vendor has handled situations which are uncommon, how he has handled escalations, variations in production flow, right? So this feedback becomes very, very important, right? Talking of feedback, again, non-related example, but very important, probably just to give you a correlation. In the Indian context, typically where you have arrange managers, right? It is, I would say, 90% likely that the bride's family will try and get feedback about the boy, right? And this feedback doesn't get limited to his place of residence, right? They will reach out to his organization, also try to get feedback how he is in the organization, whether he is very social or introvert, like. So it is only by engaging or discussing with different people and different, I would say, the environment touch points that you get to know how the person actually is. Similarly, for your, don't go by just one customer or vendor, right? You need to have feedback from multiple customers and probably different domains. And it's easy also. Most of the service providers, they publish, right? They are leading customers, I would say, in terms of where they have done maximum work, right? They would even have customers where they have done minimal work. And they would propose the best ones where they are confident of getting good feedback. For you, it is important to touch base with them, but also check if you can get feedback from some other customers who are mentioned in their list and they have worked with, and if you have a connect there, right? The other important point which is mentioned here is in terms of, this again revolves around your assessment. Is carrying out site visits, right? Floor walks. So it is important to understand how the actual delivery is taking place, right? The service provider will have a larger setup, and as I mentioned earlier, he will be serving multiple customers. You need to ensure, or you need to ascertain that you, if the engagement is large, you have a cordoned area where the entire team is dedicated to your, I would say, activity or work, and then there is adequate privacy there in terms of data not being leaked or possibility of not having ease of access for other members, right? So, doing site visits, floor walks, having a quick casual chat with the team members, all these inputs build your confidence in terms of how the service provider is managing staff or managing operations for different customers, right? So that's the first, I would say, kind of challenge highlighted. Let us look at the next challenge, which is cultural difference, right? This again is one of the top issue in outsourcing, primarily because the engagement is across geographies, right? This is not the same country, or generally near sourcing is not carried out to a larger or huge scale. It's primarily outsourcing. So it is common to have differences in the organization structure, the way communication happens, interaction. So there is a cultural difference, right? In the Western, I would say, regions or the countries there, it is very common to call people by names. And it will be the senior most, the CEO also, right? The lowermost person there, even the office assistant, right? They will be calling out by the name. If a CEO is Jim, they'll say, Jim, can I get you coffee? Right? That's very normal or natural there. Contrary to an Indian environment, even the next level is largely referred to as sir. Forget four levels beyond. It's like yes sir, no sir, right? So the cultural, and that's by culture, right? It's not that people are trained when they join the organization, but it's by culture. We feel like seniors should be referred to as sir. But there it's the name. So if you are interacting or conversing, right, with people in that kind of geography, you will find them, and probably they would be on a point be puzzled in terms of if there's a group discussing who is being referred to as sir, right? And then calling by name and adding a sir doesn't work well, right? So culturally there are a lot of differences. Again, to give you a very simple and common example, right? Culturally, brides in India, right? When they are meeting their in-laws, right? The mother-in-law, father-in-law, the bride culturally would like to take blessings by touching the feet, right? In the Western part of the world, it's like hugging the father-in-law, mother-in-law, and having a drink with them. It's common, right? So there is, it's not that they are doing something wrong, or here it's being done something different, right? It's primarily cultural construct, and in the relation it is important to understand, right? So that there is no shock or awe in terms of how this is happening, what they are doing. And this comes out in the communications as well. So when you are in discussions, one has to be very I would say receptive to the cultural aspect of things which are worked upon, right, in the other organization. Moving ahead to the next one, now time zone difference, right? So as I mentioned earlier, where the US geography wakes up, the Indian geography goes to sleep, right? So you will see that there is a large time difference between the Western and the probably Asian countries. It's more than, on an average, works out to around 12 hours for US. For Europe, it is still much lesser in terms of 3.5 hours. And sometimes it's a plus minus 1 hour based on daylight savings. But generally, if you are working for companies which are outsourcing from the United States, right, their start of day is like your end of day, right? So there is a huge time zone difference. Now, how does one cover up or address that? So primarily, if there's workload, fine, the service provider can look at having shifts, two shifts or three shifts. It is not necessary to have a 24/7 if the workload is not there. You have a lot of organizations which have region specific work or shifts. So I know of a colleague who works early morning, starts 4:30 a.m. India time. What is he working on? He's working on Australian shift, right? So for him, it's not a 24/7 activity for his org. Like, their working hours are aligned from 4:30 to till 12:30 types, right? So you have, based on the engagement, those kind of I would say office time alignment, so that the deliverables, the interaction is happening, right? Now time zone difference can become a challenge if I run a regular shift 9 to 6, right, and I am not able to have a common window with the customer. So that can become a challenge. This becomes also an issue when you are trying to deliver in stringent deadlines. Now what happens, for example, say a date 15th is where the US guys are discussing for a delivery by 20th, correct? So for them it's like 15th to 20th, they have that many days available, or probably take a Monday to Friday. But what happens is, if the discussion is on 15th afternoon, so, or I would say mid-noon, you already have lost that day in the Indian geography, right? By the time it's 11 and 12 p.m. there, here you are already off to bed. So that day accounting for a calculation becomes at a loss. While you can counter argue that yes, you have the day ahead available with you in terms of the next day, the issue is you are also looking at delivery from their perspective. So when they are looking at 20th, right? They would look at it from their perspective that it's available to them by 20th morning, right? Here it becomes difficult in terms of aligning with that many, I would say, number of working days. So this, I would say, the time zone difference understanding has to be there with the service provider during the engagement. Otherwise, it can lead to issues in deliveries. And how do you overcome this challenge? So the simplest thing is, you either, if possible, as a service provider may, so if I look at it from a service provider end, it is easy for him to just set up that shift, right? If not, if it's a larger organization, what happens is they generally have common working hours aligned with the customers based on the location of the customer. So typically for a US, I would say, client, he would have a synchronizing schedule with the customer, say early morning US time, 7 a.m., whereas it would align to some 8 p.m. here, right? So he would have that catch-up, common catch-up time where the discussion can happen. European geography, it's, as I said, easier, just 3.5 hours. So it can be something around like early mornings is again doable here. You can catch up around like 12:30 p.m. types, start of day. But there the benefit is you still have half of the day available. So this is another, I would say, challenge in the outsourcing engagement. Moving ahead, let us look at the fourth challenge. We have, I think, approximately 8 challenges listed out here. The fourth one is language. So this again, I would say, is a common issue. It's not that you can't provide a service which is in an uncommon language. You can do that. But what happens is, even for a common language like English, right, accent makes a difference, pronunciation makes a difference, and then teams find it difficult to, I would say, interact, engage, right? So overcoming this challenge, the simplest thing is have a common language, and this is what happens in most of the outsourcing engagements. You have English as a common language. Note that there are a lot of language-based outsourcing engagements which are in play, right? A simple example is of your service desk, right? Service desk for a particular region. So for example, say I have the customer, right? As a customer has an office or larger I would say set up in Finland, right? And people there speak primarily Finnish, right? And I need a service desk which is Finnish. So what happens is, at the service provider end, you have recruitment of people who are able to converse or understand Finnish and also English, right? So what happens is the conversation becomes easy, the understanding becomes easy, but the linkage to English is essential because the base platform or the system would be in English. It's like if I'm doing a global service, and I have a tool like a product which is say ServiceNow, which is used for service management, which I say use for logging incident, service request. That tool would be configured in English, right? But the, I would say, agent who's taking that call or speaking with that Finnish people, he will have to have a language grip on Finnish language so that he understands the issue. He notes it down, he puts it as a ticket in the system, say it's an IT request. For sure, the end user would communicate his issue in the local language, which is Finnish. This service desk will pick up that language, he will understand, and then input that as a ticket in the system in English. So this, again, as I said, for sure, English, use of English helps in keeping that baseline, but proficiency in the language, trying to understand the accents, right, that helps in overcoming this challenge. The next one, again, this gets linked to the earlier one, is communication, right? Now, communication is key in any engagement, right? And it is important that you are able to converse or share your information in an effective manner. The communication has to be very clear in terms of what you want to convey and whether it is going in the right sense, right? This being an important challenge in outsourcing, what happens is, to mitigate such issues, it is always essential, or I would say beneficial, to have certain standardization in the communication methodology. Here, because most of the communication will be formal, you can devise formats or templates for reports, for logging of issues, and you have, I would say, business communications, which are in terms of I would say general information going out from the service provider, and in terms of any activity happening or any system unavailability. So what happens is standardized formats or templates help, so that then you know against each parameter or each heading you have content which signifies or clarifies what the communication is used for. And for communication, again, in the current times, you have tools which you can use like Microsoft Teams or Zoom meetings for instant messaging and video calling. These tools help you engage faster in case of there being a misunderstanding or some clarification being required. One can immediately set up a Microsoft Teams meeting, right, based on availability. Discuss it out and clarify, right? So communication is another, I would say, of the challenge that we have. Moving ahead, you have the schedule adherence, right? Now, why this is a challenge? Again, contractually, you would engage with the service provider to have you deliver the required stuff in a particular timetable or time schedule, right? Because you may have his output as input to your next process. There may be a chain of events linked, or probably it may be touching base, touching to the final delivery to the customer. So this, again, and why it's a challenge, it's again culturally also there's a, I would say, linkage to this. If you notice in some parts of probably our country also, it's more of that it's okay if something is required on a date, it is okay to spill by a day, right? So some, I would say, culturally take it as a casual, casual aspect, and say fine, it's okay, we'll deliver it in a day or a couple of days more and we'll close it. But that doesn't happen largely with the Western countries, right? For them, it's very important. They work by schedules, and any deviation there is seen as failures, right? So what the service provider needs to do is, he needs to ensure that there is proper understanding on what the delivery schedule is. He should be prioritizing and planning work at the end on the shop floor in terms of ensuring that there's proper time management, there are to-do lists, right? Because as I mentioned earlier, this will form a part of the contract, right? Because if you don't give a schedule, then it becomes open-ended, and then it can lead to unanticipated delays. So that's schedule adherence. Let's look at the next one, which is quality of work, right? Now, again, why this is a challenge? It's again, it boils down to what is a level of quality according to you, and what is a level of quality according to the other person, right? So the customer has a certain expectation in terms of level of quality. He may or may not specify quality parameters, but then the understanding would be, right, when you are asking, for example, a simple example is a paper, right? So, and I've seen this personally. So, in the Western side of stuff, countries, the normal, I would say, paper used for writing or pads is of very, very, I would say it's a higher quality than what we use in India probably, right? The quality of paper here, it's not that it's not in use, it's not durable or it gets torn, but there's a vast difference in terms of the quality of paper than quality of paper here. Here you can get that quality provided you ask for it and pay for it at, for that particular quality, right? It's like you want that particular quality paper, right? High bonded paper, right? There it's a de facto stuff. When they ask for a pad, it will come naturally with that. So there's a level of I would say a view to that particular aspect of quality. So same example, a consumer from there, if he is given this quality, he would feel it is very inferior quality, right? Not that this is not used, but for him it would be a huge difference in quality. Similarly, for a guy from going from here to there, for him it is like a difference in quality. It's a higher quality at a higher price, right? So quality aspect needs to be again clarified, and as you have seen earlier, you have the norms in terms of the defects, the output, turnaround times, which signify the quality aspects. Those it is beneficial to chart them down in the contract, right? You can have a dedicated quality experts, right? Now, again, the last one, standardization. In terms of Six Sigma, ISO or CMM, these are global standards, right? So when an organization is say CMMI level certified, it by default means that it adheres to a certain level defined by CMM, which is the capability maturity model, right? So these certifications help in establishing a global benchmark, which is why the certifications become important for the service provider. So when he says the organization is ISO or CMM certified, it inadvertently signifies that he is compliant to the norms required for ISO, whether it's India, US or Europe. It's global, right? So these help in giving brownie points as well to the vendor in terms of engagement. So that's on quality of work. Coming to the, I think this would be the last of the challenge mentioned here, which is more to do with the intellectual property and data security. So as you are aware and as we've been discussing, once you are handing over your, I would say, part of a process to be run or executed by the vendor, you are sharing your business data, right? You have business content or trade-specific content which is passed on to the vendor or service provider for him to be able to do that job, right? Now, this is or poses a risk to the intellectual property. And here, your data security becomes very critical and important. So, intellectual property, this is key from the business and legal perspective. And is part of, I would say, more of having or ensuring the legal frameworks in place. We've seen earlier as well that this is key in terms of clarifying with the service provider in terms of who owns the IP, existing IP as well as the IP that will be generated as part of the engagement, right? How does one overcome such challenges? Some of the attributes here or a key point here is the NDA, which is the non-disclosure agreement, right? So if the NDA is signed by the service provider, then he would not disclose details on this engagement, correct? So what happens, this is NDA is I think common in the Indian context also. So when you have two firms engaging with each other and have an NDA signed, which means that the details of those engagement or any content which is part of that engagement won't be shared out in the I would say open forum, right? And as I mentioned, since this is linked to the legality, it is important to ensure and involve the legal teams in the contract to cover this clause, right? So these were some of the challenges. So if you have, I would say, read the entire book properly, you will notice that there are some common aspects which get repeated, right? And it is deliberately done so that these concepts are there at the back of your mind if you are into an outsourcing situation, and you don't need to refer a book to check what kind of challenges would be there, or guidelines or precautions should be taken, or what kind of vendor assessment should be done. Because these core concepts, they are in terms of critical for assessment, they are they will get highlighted in the risk as well, right? They are covered in most of the stuff. So one should keep these base, I would say, parameters in mind, so that the understanding is grounded. And as I keep on saying, the content is for reference. Actual on-ground work happens based on or linked to the environment surrounding it. And all this stuff will help you build it, build up the actual engagement there. So use these contents as, I would say, reference, key pointers. Thank you.